Brexit, Banstead, and the ties that strain. Brexit, Banstead, and the ties that strain. The Brexit referendum on 23rd June 2016 left the country on a knife's edge. With 51.89% voting in favor of leaving the EU, the original withdrawal date was set for 29th of March 2019. But beyond the politics and headlines, there was uncertainty everywhere, especially for foreign nationals living and working in the UK and Brits scattered across Europe. For many, the ground beneath their feet had begun to shift. Ben was living in Reigate at the time with his girlfriend, Alina, who was of Romanian descent. They were renting a three-bedroom flat on Bell Street, ironically, right next door to the one I had once lived in while running the cafe concession at Priory Park. In February 2017, Ben and Alina took on their own cafe venture in Banstead, a site I had previously sold to Mohammed. I'd bought it back after realizing his heart wasn't in it, and I believed Ben could do better. He had my tenacity, my optimism. At least that's what I wanted to see in him. But Brexit was looming like a shadow, and I suspect, in hindsight, it had more of an influence than we realized. Just 8 months after taking on Banstead, Ben sat me down and told me that he and Alina were getting married in December. "Congratulations," I said, smiling. "So we've got just over a year to plan." "No," he replied. "We're getting married in 3 weeks, December 27th. 3 weeks, a modest registry office wedding in Guildford, much like the one I had with his mum. "Why so sudden?" I asked, trying to read his face. "Are you sure?" "I love her, Dad," he said without hesitation. "It's what I want." I wanted to believe him. Truly. But both Diane and I had our doubts. She was more outspoken. She believed it was a strategic move, a rushed marriage for legal protection ahead of Brexit. "Calculated," she said. "She's worried about deportation, and Ben's gone along with it." I've always been a traditionalist when it comes to marriage. Despite my own cynicism, I chose to support my son. Whatever the reason, if he was willing to stand up and make that commitment, I would stand by him. My parents were overjoyed and wanted to attend. Diane declined, so did Theo and Caitlin. But Josh, Remy, and a few close family friends, Max Percival and Rory Glencourse, came along. I drove my mum and dad to Guildford, but traffic on the M25 delayed us, and we missed the official ceremony. I was gutted. But Ben didn't show disappointment. He just seemed happy we were there. By Christmas the following year, they welcomed their first child, Jack Sally Maria Jimmel. Then, in October 2019, their second daughter was born, Lorelei Zara Maria Jamil. Jax carried Ben's mother's name, Lorelei his grandmother's. Beautiful girls, full of life and light. Still, Diane held her suspicions. She saw the timing of the marriage and children as part of Alina's larger plan. Brexit insurance, she called it. It was hard to argue with her logic, but I didn't want to believe love had been reduced to paperwork and strategy. I clung to the idea that something real held them together. Running the cafe wasn't easy. There were cracks, mostly financial. Alina's money management was questionable. Money flowed in and out of the Banstead Cafe, but the cracks were starting to show. Suppliers went unpaid. Bills began to pile up. I had my concerns, but it wasn't my business anymore, not officially. I had handed it over. Still, I couldn't help stepping in from time to time, covering outstanding invoices just to keep things afloat. One of our main suppliers, John Street Beverages, became a recurring name on the list of debts I quietly settled. Diane hated this. It angered her, not just the money, but what it represented, the blurred lines. The loyalty she felt was misplaced. Her frustration cut deeper than just finances. Over the years, as the boys had grown, so had the emotional distance between them and her. I found myself caught in the middle, torn, pulled, never quite sure which way to turn. But in my heart, I always leaned toward them. They were my sons. Sometimes I helped them in secret. Small acts of support I hoped would go unnoticed. But secrets don't last. And when the truth surfaced, as it always did, it cost me dearly. Diane would explode, not just in anger, but in pain. She'd accuse me of weakness, blame me for the growing rift between her and the boys. The rows that followed left me restless, pacing through the house or lying awake into the early hours, wondering if I was making everything worse. Then one day, I cracked. Maybe it was the pressure of selling Chinbrook Road. Maybe it was the emotional strain of choosing sides in a battle I never wanted. Or maybe I just needed to breathe. Whatever it was, I bolted. I didn't tell Diane where I was going. I didn't answer calls. I just disappeared. I didn't go far, though. I went home, to the only place that had ever felt truly safe. Back to my mum and dad's. Their house had always been my refuge. It still was. Diane told everyone, even the boys, that I'd had a mini breakdown. Maybe she was right. Maybe it was anxiety. I don't know. All I knew was that I couldn't cope. I felt stifled, cornered. I was constantly being made to feel as though I had to choose between my wife and my children. I didn't want to choose. I wanted both. After a couple of weeks, some awkward conversations, a handful of tense conversations that passed for family counseling, and stretches of silence so vast they felt impossible to cross, I returned. I went back to face the music. And there was music, of course. Tension. Words. Tears. But also the faintest glimmer of hope that maybe, somewhere beneath all the conflict and fatigue, there was still a way to hold the pieces together. Ironically, the Banstead Cafe started drawing attention. Customers loved the place. Even friends of Grange Park reached out. A newly restored playground had opened next to a building on London Road, and they asked if we'd consider running a cafe there too. I visited the site and immediately saw the potential. After contacting the council, I won the tender, a 5-year contract with a stepped rent. Year 1 and 2, £4,500 per annum. Year 3 and 4, £5,000. Year 5, £5,500. On 24th of April 2019, I received the official congratulations from Croydon Council. My first thought was Don and Lynn. They lived in Croydon and were running Manor House Gardens with great success. Their daughters, Charlotte and Ellie, still lived at home and worked in the cafe. The new site seemed like the perfect expansion opportunity for their girls. But Don and Lynn declined. With them out of the picture, I turned to the market and to an old friend, Steve Wickenden. I'd known Steve since he was 14. He'd briefly run a cafe with Remy and Frimley, but when that lease ended, Remy came home. Steve didn't. He had demons. After a serious falling out with his family, he was sent to open prison for 2 years, fraud and theft from his own mother. Mum was grieving, Steve said. Chris filled her head. I knew his family well. His parents had given him everything, cars, cash, even £100,000 for a studio business. And yet, I wanted to believe him. Maybe I just wanted to believe people could change. Fresh out of prison, Steve was back in Farnborough and living with a woman named Tina, a widowed mother of 3 girls and a young boy, Taylor. Tina had been through her own nightmare. Taylor, as a young child, had developed cancer in one eye and had it removed. Years of follow-ups followed. Then her husband died of cancer too, leaving behind a house, a business, and 4 grieving children. Steve met her on a dating app. His charm won her over. He reached out to me and asked if he and Tina could take on the Coulsdon Cafe. I paused. I knew Steve's way with people. His charisma, his marketing flair. I remember going to Tina's house to go over the paperwork, franchise agreement in hand, ready to collect the franchise fee and talk through the logistics. As we sat down, I reminded her gently, the commute from Farnborough to Coulsdon wasn't a quick one. It certainly wasn't a 5-minute hop. There'd be traffic, long days, and early starts. It was no small commitment. Steve, eager to seal the deal, brushed it off without hesitation. I can do it in 30 minutes, he said confidently, waving away the warning as if traffic and distance were just background noise. Still, I turned to Tina and asked her plainly, are you sure you want to do this? There's no pressure. You don't have to go ahead unless you really want to. She smiled, wide-eyed and hopeful. I'm sure, she said. It's exciting, working with Steve, building something new together. I want this. And just like that, the deal was done. Hope was in the air, but as we shook hands and looked toward the future, I couldn't help but wonder if the road ahead would be longer and harder than either of them realized. Because I knew Steve. I knew him well. He didn't thrive on hard graft. What he loved was the pitch, the buzz of a fresh idea, the high of potential. But the follow-through, the long hours, the repetition, the grind, that had never been his strength. Still, I gave it real thought. Coulsdon had promise. The cafe had potential. Steve needed a break, and if I'm honest, at that moment in my life, I did too. Back on the home front at Chinbrook Road, the walls were closing in. Remember Ben from HNW Lending, the man I had once viewed as a lifeline? He and his company had lent me a significant amount against the equity of my home. The plan had been simple. A short-term 2-year loan that would flip into profit after the Watford Cafe build. But the cafe never materialized. The money was used elsewhere, some for Ben's cafe purchase, some as a business loan for Theo and his partners in their startup, a chunk for a new VW Tiguan for Diane, perfect for her and the dogs, and then £40,000 burned in binary trading with IQ options. I'd also use some of the money to cover the monthly repayments. But the clock was ticking, and Judgment Day was drawing near. On the 16th December 2018, I received the dreaded email from Kim at H&W Lending. Good morning, Asen. Further to your conversation with Ben on the 14th December, I am writing to reconfirm that as you were unable to redeem your loan on the 16th of December, you are now in default. The interest on your first loan of £105,000 will be £3,202.50, due 5th January and every 30 days thereafter. The interest on the further advance of £57,500 will be £2,012.50, due 12th of January and every 30 days thereafter. As Ben said, lenders are open to loan extensions if there's a proposed monthly capital reduction, ideally at least £2,000. Please let us know your plan. Regards, Kim. The next letter was even worse. It came from Woolwich Magistrates Court, a repossession summons. After the hearing, Ben and I agreed on a final deadline. I would repay all outstanding debt by 14th July 2019. The pressure was relentless. There was no other way out. We had to sell the house and move somewhere cheaper. Then came the letter from Bromley County Court. It was real now, a suspended possession order. It granted H&W Lending possession of 52 Chinbrook Road, but suspended the order if I stuck to a grueling payment plan. £1,500 per month, then a final lump sum of £195,000 due on the 14th July 2019. We put the house on the market with John Payne for £720,000 and accepted an offer for £670,000. Diane was devastated. She didn't show it loudly, but I knew. This had been our family home, but she stayed composed. We drove around Kent, exploring villages outside Tunbridge Wells, Rotherbridge, Maidstone, even Chatham. I was open to anything. Diane wasn't. She only had eyes for Eastbourne. The turning point came when Theo's fiancée, Stephanie, sent us a picture of a house in Elms Grove, a 5-bedroom detached with a self-contained annex and a tenant already in place. Asking price, £495,000. We fell in love with it immediately. We offered £460,000. They accepted. Now we just had to do the maths. I assumed we could simply transfer our Halifax mortgage to the new property. I was wrong. The Halifax system rejected the application. Despite a long history with them, despite never defaulting on the mortgage, we were told to reapply from scratch. Our income, drawn mostly from company dividends, wasn't enough on paper, and my age wasn't helping. We tried every route. Brokers recommended by our accountant, friends from Blackheath. Even Fred offered to buy the house himself and gift it back to us later. Still, the door kept slamming shut. In a last-ditch effort, I bypassed the high street and went directly to the underwriters at Lloyds Bank, Halifax's parent company. After several calls and follow-up emails, I finally got a response. Hi, Asen. Sorry for the delay. I've not been in the office. Good news, the underwriters are happy to agree to the mortgage transfer, provided the loan amount remains the same. Regards, Lloyds Bank. The Halifax approved £245,000, but after doing our sums, that still left us £20,000 short. I negotiated with Mike and Zoe, the sellers, asking them to reduce their price to £440,000 with a personal promise to pay the remaining £20,000 a year later. Keen to sell and travel, dreaming of Bali and the Far East, they agreed. With that, the sale went through. Chinbrook Road was sold. The Halifax mortgage came with us, and so on the 5th of July 2019, we packed up our lives and left. Two cars groaned under the weight of our most precious belongings, the things we couldn't bear to entrust to the removal firm, every inch crammed, every box a fragment of the life we were leaving behind. The journey should have felt like a new beginning, but instead, it unraveled. Completion funds were delayed until Monday, the 8th of July, just one day before our wedding anniversary. Frustrated and weary, Diane turned back to Lewisham to stay with her mum, while I checked into a soulless travelodge in Croydon. It wasn't the start we had imagined, but I had made a promise to Steve and Tina, and I wasn't about to break it. Their cafe was opening in Coolsden that weekend, and I wanted to be there to witness it. And what a sight it was. I watched them breathe life into their dream. Steve, effortlessly charming, drawing people in with warmth and ease. Tina, tireless and precise, her work ethic stitched into every detail. Together they had chosen it all. The colors, the wallpaper, the soft furnishings, every corner a reflection of their vision. The cafe gleamed with personality and care. Their pride was palpable, infectious even. For a moment, standing there in the buzz of their creation, the chaos of my own life faded, replaced by the quiet joy of seeing friends step into their future. On Monday morning, Deborah Tate, our solicitor, called. "You've completed." I drove to Eastbourne. Diane came from Lewisham. No sleep, no rest. Diane unpacked boxes for 2 days straight. Kizzy and Mabel, our dogs, followed her room to room as she turned chaos into a home. Making a house feel lived in. That was always one of her gifts. One evening, we sat on the sofa after a gentle walk through Hampden Park Woods, and I finally exhaled. We were here. We'd made it. I just had to find £20,000 for Mike and Zoe in a year. That, I told myself, I could do. But something was missing. My sons. They refused to visit. The house was big enough for everyone, but they had their own lives, their own reasons. And those reasons didn't include Eastbourne, or me. Just before the house sold, after my niece Amel's wedding, my nephew announced his own. He was marrying Catherine, his Colombian bride-to-be. The wedding was set for August 2019 in Cartagena, Colombia. Diane, Caitlin, Theo, and the boys were all invited. My parents wanted to go. So did I. But money was tight, and I couldn't commit. Still, Mum and Dad insisted. They needed help. Mum in a wheelchair, Dad frail. They offered to pay for me, as long as I promised I'd be there. I agreed. Diane could have come too, but she didn't want to. She stayed in Eastbourne. We'd just moved. Maybe the timing wasn't right. Maybe she just didn't want to go. So a few weeks after settling into our new life, I boarded a plane alone. And there, on the Caribbean coast of Colombia, I stood beside my family for a beautiful wedding, celebrated my sister's 60th birthday on the idyllic island of San Andres, and for a few days felt the kind of peace I hadn't known in years.